Today is February 1st, 2022, and I'm here with Keith Green, and we're going to talk about some of his early Phantom Ranch memories. Okay, so here we go. You were hired in 75, you said, and the manager at the time was Glenn Hope. And you never told this story that you did write about, but you should tell it for the recorder, about going down for your interview, and I guess some employees were departing, and you were arriving, and they were going to have a party for the departing employees, and they had a certain punch. Do you remember this at all? It was called, you called it Run Amok Punch.
Okay.
And you drank a bit of it. Do you remember anything about that night?
No, I don't remember this very well. Run Amok Punch, it possibly had LSD in it.
You didn't, in your article, you said it had a lot of tequila in it.
Oh, a lot of tequila.
So this would be your first night, your very first night down there.
Yeah, it wouldn't have had LSD then. Yeah, it was probably a lot of tequila. And
apparently it made you sick. Do you remember this at all? You got pretty sick.
I'm not sure. There were a lot of times when, there was this kind of machine in the bathroom where you hold down the handle and you have this waterfall.
Oh and no!
Something to throw up in. See,
oh
so.
God! Well, what you said it. What happened was that you. It said you went to bed. The manager's name at that time was Glenn Hope.
Hoag.
Hoag. H-O-A-G? I think, probably.
H-O-G.
H-O-G-E. Okay, because
maybe. I don't know.
If they spelled it H-O-P-E in that article. Okay, and it said that you said that he was already in bed in his bedroom and you were sleeping in his living room and the bed started to spin.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Do you
remember
this
now? Yeah.
And you had to make it past his bed to get to the bathroom?
That's right. That's right, because I got sick. I was, run amok punch. Boy, I'd forgotten that whole story.
It really made me laugh.
Yeah.
And you also said in an article kind of close to that time, you called them the Brain Damage Club from up on the rim, and they hired somebody, maybe that was just a nickname you had for them privately, they hired some guy named John B.
Bond.
Do you remember him? Was he a big drinker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, John Bond. Well, he was actually, part of the whole scene down there for quite a long time.
Oh, really?
I don't think right at first he was.
But he ended up staying for quite a while?
Well, he eventually got hired by Don Weir.
Okay.
Don Weir, the manager. But he was the manager more like around 1980.
Okay, so let me ask this. Is Don Weir, a.k.a. Bob Weir?
Yes.
Ha ha! Finally, I know his real name. Okay. Don Weir, W-E-I-R?
Yes.
Okay. Don Weir. Okay, so he did, John Bond got hired by Weir.
Uh-huh.
All
but
right.
He would come down there quite often, and he was quite a drunk at the time.
Okay.
And in fact, he eventually lost his driver's license for drunk driving, and God, he never got thrown in jail, but well, he might have been thrown in jail, but anyway, he gave up drinking, and now he's a fairly upstanding person, you know. He doesn't drink at all.
Is he still, like, is he in Northern Arizona, do you think, mm-hmm. still?
Bond? He still is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, his wife is Sally Bond,
mm-hmm.
who works at the hospital now.
And oh. So,
actually, she's reading the Michelle Obama book to Nancy right now.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
And who is this Judy who's here right now?
Judy is Judy Beckerleg, is her last name. And she is, let's see, she started working as for Nancy, helping Nancy when she was in, I mean, this is much later, we're talking 1980 or something around there. And no, yeah, it was later than that.
Like she was an aide? An aide or something?
Maybe. 1990 perhaps. But anyway, her husband, Dave Beckerleg, was the food and beverage director for Fred Hardy Company.
Okay.
In the 90s.
Okay.
And but anyway, she was she volunteered at the school, and they put her, they gave her to Nancy for who was doing was doing special ed.
Okay.
And as a aide for Nancy, so that's how we got to know.
So her. You've known her a long time then.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So now I want to go back to this Bob Ware, Don Ware guy. Do you think he's still alive?
I don't know. I think he is, but I mean, I haven't heard that he died, but he was, you know, a pretty serious drunk, and so I don't know if he's still alive or not.
I'm going to look him up when I get back, now that I know what his real name is, because you think he went back to Montana? Or do you think after he was fired, apparently, at some point, because of his drinking and mismanagement of funds, cash. Cash was not deposited in a timely way.
Right.
You remember that?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, at a certain point, they flew down in a helicopter to give him his walking papers. Do you remember any of that?
Yeah. Flying papers.
His flying papers. So we'll find out if he's still around. I can look, do a little research and see if I can find him.
I have seen him, but it's been a long time. But I saw him once at Charlie's here in Flagstaff.
But that was probably a while ago, huh?
But that was a while ago, yeah.
And so, you know, that was my first question, was what was his real name? And apparently he was kind of a redneck from Montana, right? More or less,
right.
A cowboy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they thought he would, well, basically the manager, the food and beverage manager for Fred Harvey thought that he would make a good, addition to the atmosphere of Phantom Ranch because he's a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out he was not just, it turned out to be kind of a lazy cowboy.
That's what I gathered from reading it.
So he wasn't keeping track of anything. He was just, basically putting all the money in a bag and sitting it up on the mules.
Yeah, so, and then you had wrote somewhere that he would have these parties that were called something. Let me just see if I can find it. It was called, Powder River Runaway Party.
Yeah, that's right.
And that he...
Because that's where he was from, Powder River up in Montana.
And you said in the thing that you and others couldn't understand how he could possibly have the money to throw these big parties, and he would occasionally even rent a part of a lodge or something that was up on the rim to hold these parties.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this stuff?
Yeah. What lodge was it? Moki Lodge. Yeah, he would rent part of Moki Lodge and invite everybody, you know, mostly the cowboys from the rim, and have these big drunks up there.
Yeah, and you said that, you know, this with the laziness thing, that he sometimes would forget to order food. This was in one of your things that he couldn't solve problems. He could never be found when you needed him.
Right.
And then he would forget to order food sometimes. And this book really kind of cracked me up. Apparently, Marion Sharp, who I know, was the assistant manager or something there for a while, and she ordered shrimp.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't like that. Do you remember that story?
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't want any of that vegetarian crap.
Yeah. That's pretty good. And he kind of outlawed it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Red meat for him.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then
actually, you know what? He was, I learned this later, he was actually, God, what was the actual manager of food and beverage? He had been a bus driver for Navajo Tours, and somehow he ended up being in charge of food and beverage. So, not food and beverage, in charge of the transportation department.
Okay.
And, God, I can see his face, but I can't think of his name. But anyway, he just thought, you know, that having a cowboy would be the greatest thing. I forgot what I was trying to say. What were we talking
about? Well, we were talking about how, you know, she tried to just bring shrimp down for this one meal, he just didn't like it. And he said, meat only.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, yeah, so, you know, there were some other things about him when they first hired him.
And, of course, he's coming down, you know, to Phantom Ranch where at least, oh, I remember what I was going to say, where at least half the staff were vegetarians already.
Like hippies, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, he was actually told to clean out Phantom Ranch. He didn't ever do it. But he was supposed to, fire Roy, who...
Starkey, who you've told me about.
Roy Starkey, who was, you know, he was forgetful, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and borderline, you know, losing it, but...
Yeah,
he was
sounded
still able
like
to deal with everything.
He had like early onset Alzheimer's because he was only in his like mid-50s, I think, when you and he worked together.
Right. Right.
That's pretty
early.
So
anyway, he was supposed to fire Roy, and he was supposed to fire me just because I was blind.
God. So you didn't get on with him.
Well, I didn't know that at the time, you know, but I found that out later. So I didn't have a feud with him or anything, but I definitely thought he was a pretty strange pick for the manager of Phantom Ranch.
Yeah, I don't know. Wonder how they found him. You don't know.
I think was new the general manager for Fred Harvey, Tony Gresick, I think is his, was his name.
Okay.
And Tony Gresick hired him for that very reason, you know, because he was a cowboy.
Well, you said they used to call it Acid Ranch. Acid Ranch.
And oh, really?
You said he was hired to improve the image of Acid Ranch. So that was going on down there then.
Well, yeah, I guess it wasn't, you know, common to call it Acid Ranch, but yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you said that's how the phone was answered at a certain point. They would say, instead of Phantom Ranch, they'd say Acid Ranch.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
Yeah,
That could be.
Well, it was because it went from, you said it went from hippie staffing, and he wanted it to make it, like, more cowboy.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, he wanted it to be, like, kind of a ranch, an actual... He wanted it to run like a real dude ranch.
Huh, which is, you know, that's asking a lot of Phantom Ranch employees, right?
Right. But yeah, there was actually a family that was from Montana that Tony Gresick actually hired to spy on Phantom Ranch to see if they could catch us breaking rules.
God, you're kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. It was pretty...
Were they working rotten. Down there? What were they?
No, they weren't. They were guests. And they'd come down every once a month or so. They'd come down and they would have packed in whole boxes like this big of booze.
Oh my God.
And bring all of this alcohol down. And, you know, there were, you know, of course people could be talked into drinking, you know, but, you know, what they were trying to do is catching people drinking on the job.
Yeah, they were basically trying to set you guys up, is what it sounds like.
Exactly. Exactly, and they basically kind of did that, and there were, I don't know, that we tried to keep them out of the lodge, and that was the hard part, is because they would just walk in the back door, and it says employees only, and, you know, sit in the back and pull out a bottle of booze and start drinking it with, you know, telling, you know, talking with everybody.
Right, trying to get people to drink.
You know, and we're like going, what is going on here? Why are they coming in? And, you know, who's letting them in? And I don't know, I think that, you know, we were trying to keep them out of there. But
somebody was letting them in.
Somebody would let them in. Well, they were just walking in.
Wow.
They didn't have to feel like they, you know, and we didn't know, of course, that they were spies for Tony Gresick, that he was trying to can us all. We didn't have any idea that that's what was going on, but that's what was going on.
And you think this family was from Montana?
I think so, yeah.
And so they knew this Don Weir somehow, or did they know another?
Tony Gresick.
And who is that?
I don't know how well they knew.
Who's Tony Gresick?
Tony Gresick was the general manager.
Okay, that's good.
At the time.
Okay, Tony Gresick.
Of Phantom Ranch. I mean, of Grand Canyon Lodges.
Okay, so the manager of Phantom Ranch reported to the manager of the Grand Canyon Lodges.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, he would be over him. Do you remember a guy named Lenny?
Yeah.
What can you tell me about him?
He was kind of a ne'er-do-well. Stories about Lenny.
Well, he was supposed to be the unofficial groundskeeper. That's what you had said.
Yeah, I think that Don hired him to do that. To be, you know, like we needed somebody like that. You know, instead of Roy, you know, who was the official groundskeeper.
The real groundskeeper.
They, yeah.
And you said that, do you remember that you believed or he did bring down booze for Wire? Lenny did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, yeah, a lot of people were doing that.
Right. And that he, okay, and then he had a nickname. I don't know if you remember this. It was Lenny the Leech. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Well, that was because he was just kind of, you know, we were all going, why is this guy eating with us? You know, he's not ever been hired or anything.
He's the living hero.
You know, he was just a friend of Don Weir.
Yeah, that's basically what you said. He was unofficially down there. He wasn't really making money, right?
No, he was just there. And he was kind of a scummy kind of a person, in my opinion. And that, you know what? The last time I saw him was actually just right down here at this, that grocery store. What's that called?
Bash's.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was like, we had gone into the store and we went on our way to the canyon to buy something, you know, to
take
you
up
know,
with
that
you.
We needed, right. You know, to come up. And he was hanging out in front of Bash's and he saw us and he wanted us to buy, he said that you don't have to have a prescription to get codeine cough syrup.
Oh God, how
and,
horrible.
And so, you know, would we buy him, because he's already gotten one for him, but he wanted some more.
That's sad.
You know, can you... you know, can you buy some more codeine cough syrup for me? And, you know, he gave me, you know, tried to give me some money, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that.
So he didn't turn out very well, you know, after he left the canyon, obviously.
Oh, he was a scumbag, and I don't know whatever happened to him. I mean, he could be laying in a ditch someplace.
Right, right.
For all I know.
Well, let me ask this. You said that when Bob Weir was hired, he brought his wife down, and they also had a dog. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, they had a dog, and of course, there's no dogs allowed in the canyon. So, so he brought this dog down. It was a German Shepherd or something like that. It was a big dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought this dog down in the middle of the night and kept it in his cabin, in the manager's cabin. But you can see the manager's cabin from the windows that are right next to the employee, the place where the employees have lunch, have dinner. The back room basically of the lodge. You can see from there you can look across the ranch and see the manager's cabin. And it was always funny because, you know, new people would come down. I remember especially Cindy Burns one time because she's really expressive anyway. But she was sitting on the side of the table where she's looking at the window, and we were talking with her, and all of a sudden her mouth just dropped open. I was like, "What's going on?" And she said, "There's a dog over there.
Ooh.
There's a dog in the manager's cabin." And by this time, we had it figured out because we heard barking.
Yeah,
you know. From over there, We figured it out that he had a dog there, but...
So what happened with the dog? Did they...
Well, they eventually they confronted him with it, and he had to take it, I don't know what he did with it.
They've had somebody watch it or take care of it.
Yeah, they had to get it out of there, but...
Okay, well, let me see. Employees.
But that was one of the tricks that Don Weir tried to pull, you know.
Yeah, that was right when they hired him, too.
Yeah, yeah. He was really a bad scene or bad idea, I think, on the part of.
Yeah, you wrote about that the employees pilfered stuff from the manager's cabin before Don Weir got there. Before he got there, you guys moved a couch out to the employee dorm. Do you remember that?
No, I didn't know you remember that. Wow. Well, it must be true. I mean, if I wrote it.
Yeah. And then you said that he wanted his own mule to get in and out of the canyon, but the Fred Harvey Company said no. Well, that was probably to bring booze down and...
Well, he was not a hiker.
Oh.
You know, he wore cowboy boots all the time, you know, which are smooth bottom, and, you know, you don't...
Can't hike in
cowboy boots. And any time there was a helicopter going in and out, and he would take it, you know, that was his transportation.
He didn't want to hike it at all.
Right.
So he really wasn't at all tuned into... the reason most people would want to work down there, which was the beauty and the experience of the canyon. He was just really, you know, hired to turn it into, or he in his own mind wanted to turn it into a dude bat ranch, or somebody wanted him mm-hmm. to.
Right.
You had said right. He wanted employees to dress in cowboy clothes instead of like the normal shorts and t-shirts, which people normally wore in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't force us to, though, thank God.
Thank God, because maybe you guys didn't have those kind of clothes.
Well,
right?
You know, they would have had to, you know, order them for one thing, you know, because nobody had anything like that.
Do you remember anything about him wanting new hires to be able to sing and play Western music and tell tall tales to the dudes?
Yep, yeah, that was his kind of the thing he was pushing when he first got down there. And that, I think, is possibly why he wasn't trying to get rid of me, because I was a storyteller.
Yeah, that probably could be, right?
Yeah.
Wow, you said that he hired somebody named Dave Brown who could play musical instruments during beer hall. Could you remember a Dave Brown?
Well, that's probably, I probably changed his name to protect the innocent, but I think that might be Dave Bowman.
Oh, I bet it is. Because that was one of your first, when you first started writing the columns, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and he would play. Okay, and then... Oh, and he had made a comment at one point, this is weird, that Cindy Burns was the only good one of your lot.
Well, that's because she was always bailing him out.
Really?
Yeah, she was the assistant manager at first, I think. Marion... I can't remember. She was before or after Marion, but yeah, she was basically running the ranch, you know, because he wasn't. So, you know, she was constantly bailing him out of problems that he'd gotten into.
So, of course, he had to like her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I think you had, Glenn Hoag was a previous manager, 75, and then Terry was there in 76,
mm-hmm.
and then he came in 77, and was he there a couple years?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you talk about Bob Sutton drove the Cross Canyon Shuttle. I don't know what that is.
Oh, there, well, it was actually started by, why is my mind block out names the second I'm about to say them? Steve Young. Steve Young was a roommate of mine for a while, and he quit, and he had the idea. Well, what has happened was the airline that used to Grand Canyon Airlines used to fly across the canyon.
Okay.
Used to fly from North Rim to South Rim.
And okay.
And they were landing at a dirt strip there, kind of by the Kaibab Lodge. Anyway, the Park Service decided they didn't want them doing that anymore. So there was no real transportation from North Rim to the South Rim.
Okay.
And so Steve Young bought a, you know, quit from Phantom and bought a, I mean, it took a, you know, this is, didn't happen all at once, but anyway, he ended up buying a van and then advertising, you know, transportation to the North Rim. And it went over like, you know, like crazy. And before long he had like two or three vans.
Wow.
That were going across the canyon every day. You know?
And they would go all the way out to 89 and then all the way up Jacobs Lake and all that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah, all the way, well, you know.
It's a long drive.
Yeah, up, right, up 64, yeah. 89 and yeah, all the way to the trailhead, basically.
So they would pick people up where?
Well, at the time I wrote it, they were picking you up. They picked me up at the Bright Angel Trailhead on the South Rim.
Okay.
And then they let you off at the trailhead on the north. Well, let's see, how did that work? They'd pick you up at Bright Angel and they take you around, but it seemed to me like they had a deal going with the lodge. So, anyway, it was transportation from the North Rim to the South.
Do they still have such a thing?
Yes, it's very
popular, profitable.
And
so these are people who want to see the North and the South Rim in one trip? And
no, these are people that want to hike across the canyon.
Okay, so...
So what they do is they take the shuttle across. Well, the shuttle used to start really early in the morning, so I guess that's how it went. They'd get over there, but of course by then it would be 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, but then
they'd hike all the way down.
Across that day, you know, and it's become an industry, I swear.
Right.
I noticed, I stayed at the Kaibab Lodge, we stayed at the Kaibab Lodge the last few times we've been over there, and it fills up with people. You know, that's one of the stops the Cross Canyon Shuttle makes, the Kaibab Lodge.
Right.
And it stops there, and a lot of people stay there at the Kaibab, and then The next morning, they, you know, get up early and they arrange transportation somehow to get out to the trailhead, and then they
hike across the canyon
in one day.
I mean, it would make sense to take the shuttle, because it's a long drive, spend the night at the Kaibab Lodge, and then get to the rim by some alternate.
Yeah.
They probably have something that runs from the Kaibab Lodge, you'd think.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how that worked, but anyway, that's the Grass Canyon Shuttle. And
Steve Young started it.
Steve Young started it. And he sold it to Tom Jones, who has grown it. It's funny, for a long time Tom Jones had a cabin, which is one of the old cabins. It used to be a motor lodge cabin,
mm-hmm.
and it got moved outside the park. He bought it or paid for it anyway, because they were getting rid of them in the park, so...
Okay.
It used to be part of the motor lodge, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, they moved it it was kind of behind... there was a trailer court, kind of a trailer... not court, but, you know, trailer village sort mm-hmm. of thing. And it was kind of behind that is where they put the cabin. But that was headquarters for all these people that I knew.
Okay.
Because they were all driving for it.
Okay. And so Bob Sutton.
Bob Sutton's one of the people that was
driving. Who was the driver. And who was Larry Powell?
Larry Powell was, back when, and now we're going back to early days now, back into the 1970s, he was an artist and was really good at painting the canyon.
Okay.
But he and Bob Sutton got to know, now I don't know for sure which one it is, Halverson maybe? And Halverson... This is so convoluted. I don't know if I can tell the real story. But anyway, Halverson, I think it was Halverson, let's see, in order to, what was it he gained from that? Halverson. It had something to do with the Canyon Squire and the lodges out in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it is, but somehow he had to trade land with the Forest Service. And somehow in that trade, he acquired this Halverson guy.
Mm-hmm.
Acquired the mine out on the rim.
Wow.
Lost Orphan mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bob heard about this and offered to be a caretaker of the mine for Halverson.
This was Bob Sutton.
Bob Sutton.
Okay.
Right. And
how did Larry Powell get into this mix?
Okay, well, Larry Powell was a friend of Bob's.
Okay.
And so the two of them went out and checked out, you know, the Las Urban Mine is right there on the rim out at Maricopa Point. And they went out and checked it out and went, wow, this would be a great place to live. It's right on the edge of the canyon. You know, what a deal, you know. And so they arranged to be the caretakers for Halvorsen, who really didn't care anything about that mine. He was into making money in Tucson.
Right.
There were some old cabins up there, and they were able to piece a couple of them together right next to the actual shaft. You know, do you remember the frame thing that
used
to be out there?
Yes.
It was just right at the foot of that they found these two cabins, and Larry took one and Bob took the other one.
Got it.
And they were like right on the rim, looking over the edge of the Grand Canyon.
And they were stable enough to live in. They weren't going to like slide into the canyon.
Well, they fixed them up.
Okay.
They definitely fixed them up.
Well, that's cool.
But anyway, and so Larry was like, it was funny because they were between the two cabins. There was a little hill, and on the top of the hill was an outhouse, because they didn't have, you know, water. But the outhouse, there was no reason to have a door on it, because it looks out over the canyon.
Oh, God, how nice. What a wonderful place to go to the bathroom.
It was fun.
That's cool. Do those cabins still exist?
I don't think so. I think they've been torn down. I'm not sure.
Okay, that's
what's happened to them.
Something to go look for.
I know because you know that whole area is all covered. You know, they covered it with tar paper or some kind of plastic in order to try to keep the dust down, because the dust
from the mine
is radioactive.
Yeah. And they still fighting about mining up there, even to this day. It's so crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I'm sure.
Well, let me ask this. You talked about in one of your articles about how big the trout were in Bright Angel Creek.
That's right. They tended to be up to five pounds.
I mean, is there still big trout like that?
No. Because what happened was the media found out about it. It was for a long time, you know, we were, you know, the only ones fishing down there, because, you know, who thinks of bringing a fishing rod down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon? So
you got some good trout, man.
So we were the only ones doing fishing, and it got discovered by somebody in Field and Stream magazine.
Oh no!
And they published an article about
trout
with pictures and everything about trout at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And ever since then, it's been you have to get a fishing license and the rangers checking fishing licenses and all that stuff, you know, has to be done.
Right.
Now that it's... So anyway, since that's been going on, there haven't been 5-pound trout in there. But anyway, yeah, it was actually, we had done this thing where some of it was like, I wasn't a fisherman, but Bob Topping, who's a name that you got to include.
Right, somehow. No, we've got Topping in here, believe me.
Yeah.
We've got
Bob Topping was a fisherman too. You know, but of course he was the kind that tells fish stories too.
Right, so. But he could fish though.
But he was good. Yeah, he was good at fishing. And but anyway, we would catch fish, but eventually, some, you know, it got told that you know, it got to be known that there were. It was good fishing down there, and so.
And that kind of, they got overfished, and.
Well, what happened is people started coming down with fishing poles and stuff, and it got known that way, and then that's how it got picked up by Field and Stream, but.
Okay.
But, yeah, for the longest time, we were, we had a deal where, you know, if somebody had, a meal ticket for Phantom Ranch, like a steak dinner,
mm-hmm.
we would cook their trout for them instead of a steak dinner. Well, we'd give them a choice, of course. If you wanted a steak or trout or both, you know, you could.
Right, wow.
But yeah, so we'd cook trout for them, just, you know, just make a place on the grill.
Oh, God, my husband would be in heaven. That's his favorite, is that... Let me ask one last question for today, and then we better stop it, because I finally got into your stash of memories,
uh-huh.
Now I have a lot of stuff that we can talk about, but I'll ask only one more. When you started in 75, and you mentioned in your articles that in 77 is when they started doing the renovations of Phantom Ranch,
uh-huh.
And so were you there when they filled in the swimming pool?
I was, no, they didn't fill in the swimming pool until, well, they closed the swimming pool in, I believe it was 72.
Okay.
And they didn't, by closing it, like in 72, that was the first time I'd ever hiked down to Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
I didn't know it was a swimming pool. I didn't know what it was, but in the middle of the ranch was this big hole, and it was full of, it just had a bunch of trash in it, and it had a construction tape all the way around it so people wouldn't fall into it, but that was the scene in 72, and sometime between 72 and 75, they used, okay, here's another part of Phantom Ranch history, because of the, after the flood, have you read anything about
yes,
the flood
I
yet?
Have, yes, and that's, I don't want to get into that because I have a whole bunch of questions. There was a flood in 65 and there was another flood in the 90s.
But anyway, they used the bulldozer that
okay.
they used to fix it after the flood. They used the bulldozer to fill in
okay.
the swimming pool.
So that there was a big flood, you said, in the late 60s.
68, yeah.
And then there was a flood in the early, sometime in the 70s. Wait a second. Or maybe that was in the early 80s. It was the same flood when Nancy had to be rescued?
No.
There was another flood in between there?
That was a different flood, yeah. That
wait
was
a
whole different story.
I wrote down, hang on. I don't want to get way ahead because that's like three pages ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So hang on 1 second here. I have a whole bunch of questions on the remodeling of Phantom Ranch.
Uh-huh.
And so we're going to have to save that. Oh, there was a flood in 65, and then it said there was a flood in 95 where the water pipe, that's the year you had in your article. I don't know if it's correct, but it said the water pipe got mangled. Even though Bright Angel Creek bed has been dug deeper, the water still manages to jump the banks. Okay, let's save that for another thing. But so apparently there is a flood that happened after you started in the 70s.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that. I'm just saying that there was definitely a flood in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's when they, but you said that they bulldozed it after some other flood, not that 65 flood, though, you don't think.
Bulldozed what? The
bulldozed all the dirt into the pool.
Into the pool. No, that was in 70, that would have been in 70, probably 73, 74, someplace in there.
And that's when they used this bulldozer that they had used to kind of clean up after a flood.
After the flood of 68.
Okay, 68. Okay, 68. All right, well, I'm going to, I have other questions, but I got to go. But one of the questions I have, and this is such an ignorant question, because I just don't know that much about the history of the ranch, but you talk about the tent tops were converted into dorms, hiker dorms. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what a tent top is. I don't even know what any of this stuff is, what these tent tops, what the heck was a tent top?
It's a okay.
Is this going to be a long story? Because if it is, then we better save it for next week.
Well, it is a little long.
Okay, let's save it because there I have that can go with the questions on the remodeling of the of Phantom Ranch that went on in the around 77. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And when all they started remodeling some cabins that employees had been in for revenue cabins.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's all out of your articles. I mean, I've been reading every article.
Okay.
But you can talk about things that I don't know. I don't know what they are. And that's one of them, a tent top.
Uh-huh. Well, think of a
building with a tent on
a
top?
A building where the roof is canvas.
Wow, I don't even know where. Are there pictures of this anywhere?
I have one somewhere in this box.
Down there on the floor?
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find one online so I can actually see it.
Yeah, okay. It's actually that. The picture I have is they were dismantling them at the time and trading them for the dormitories, but which would have been the 77 thing. But anyway, they unhooked the roof, the
tent part.
No, the a roof had been built over it.
Okay.
With shingles and all that
stuff. Oh, okay.
Shingle roof, and it had wooden walls, too. It's just, if you went into it and looked up, laid on the bed and looked up, the ceiling was all canvas.
Wow. I had no idea. That's kind of interesting. And they did this whole dismantling of those while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's stop it there.